Chapter 7. Bobo's Run. The Paradiso Chateau, southern France. By the time Mulch and Duda landed outside Tourette-sur-Loup, the dwarf was a nervous wreck.
"He's crazy,"
he gibbered, tumbling from the hatch of a tiny titanium pod, which had been landed expertly on a flat patch not much bigger than a postage stamp.
"The Pexy's crazy. Give me your gun, Ollie. I'm going to shoot him."
Dudardet appeared in the hatch, hopping nimbly to the ground.
"That ship is fantastic,"
he said in Gnomish.
"Where can I get one?"
His grin withered and died when he noticed that the thing he had previously believed to be a tree moved and spoke in one of the primitive mudman tongues.
"This would be Dudardet, I presume. He makes a lot of noise, doesn't he?"
"Ah,"
said Duda.
"Big mud man."
"Yes, he is," said another mudman, or maybe a mud boy. This one was smaller, but somehow seemed even more dangerous.
"You speak Gnomish?"
asked the terrified Pixie, in case the big one would eat him for not being polite. "Yes," said Artemis, "I do, but Butler is not so fluent, so English, if you wouldn't mind."
"Sure thing, not a problem,"
said Duda, grateful that he still had the tiny spark of magic left in his brain necessary to fuel his gift of tongues. Duda and Mulch had flown across the lower peaks of the Alpes Maritimes in a pod built for riding the magma flares from the Earth's core. These chutes had rudimentary shields, but they were not intended for above-ground travel. Duda's instructions had been to ride the hotshots to a small port near Bern, Switzerland, then strap on a pair of wings and low-fly the rest of the way. But once Duda got behind the pod's wheel, he decided that it would be much faster if they did the second leg on board the tiny ship. Holly was impressed. "You fly pretty well for a smuggler. Those pods handle like a three-legged pig." Duda slapped a titanium fin fondly.
"She's a good girl. You just need to treat her right."
Mulch was still shaking.
"We came this close to being incinerated. I lost count after the first dozen times."
Duda chortled.
"That's not all you lost, dwarf. Someone is going to have to swab the decks in there."
Holly looked Duda in the eyes. Okay, they were making small talk, but there was a little history between them. "You could have killed me, Pixie," said Holly evenly, giving the little smuggler a chance to explain himself.
"I know. I nearly did. That's why it's time for me to get out of the business, review the situation, take a long, hard look at my priorities."
"Horse manure," tuttered Holly. "I don't believe a word."
"Me neither. That's my parole board spiel, with the big eyes and the wobbly lip. Works every time. But seriously, I'm sorry about the multi-mixer thing, officer. I was desperate. But you were never in danger. These hands are pure magic on a wheel."
Holly decided to let it go. Nursing a grudge would only make a difficult mission next to impossible. And anyway, now Duda would have a chance to make it up to her. Butler lifted Mulch to his feet.
"How you doing there, Mulch?"
Mulch glowered at Duda.
"I'll be doing fine once my head stops spinning. That ship is only built for one, you know. I've had that little monkey on my lap for past few hours. Every time we went over a bump, he butted me under the chin."
Butler winked at his dwarf friend.
"Well, look at it this way. You had to take a ride in his environment, but now he has to take a ride in yours."
Duda caught the end of that sentence.
"Ride? What ride? Who has to take a ride?"
Mulch rubbed his hairy palms together.
"I'm going to enjoy this."
They lay down in a row in a low ditch overlooking the chateau. The land sloped gently downwards and was dotted with the twisted forms of ancient olive trees. The surface soil was dry and loose, but reasonably tasty, according to Mulch.
"The Alpine water's pretty good," he explained, spitting out a mouthful of pebbles. "And the olives give the clay a nice tang."
"That's very nice," said Artemis patiently. "But all I really want to know is, can you make it to the septic tank?"
"Septic tank?"
said Duda nervously.
"What are we talking about septic tanks for? I ain't going to no septic tank. Forget the deal."
"Not into the tank," corrected Artemis. "Behind it. The tank is the only cover before the chateau itself." Holly was scanning the terrain with her visor. "The tank is buried as close to the house as possible, and after that it's just rock. But you have a nice quick vein of soil as far as that point. What you need to do is lure that boy in the cowboy hat in behind the tank with a bar of chocolate. Then Dudar takes his place.
Then what? That toy isn't going anywhere fast.
It doesn't need to, Dudar. All you have to do is drive inside the house and wind this round any video cable you see. Holly handed Dudar a cable tie with tiny spikes along its length. This is loaded fibre optic. Once it's in place, we own their surveillance.
Can we rewind to the bar of chocolate? Said Mulch. Does anyone have one?
Here, said Artemis, handing him a flat bar and a green wrapper. Butler bought this in the village. It's very low quality, not 70% cocoa or fair trade for that matter, but it'll do.
So what about after the kid eats the chocolate? Asked Mulch. What do we do with the kid?
You're not to injure him, said Holly. Just entertain him for a minute.
Entertain him? How am I supposed to do that?
Use your dwarf talents, suggested Artemis. Young children are inquisitive. Eat some rocks, pass wind. Little Bo will be fascinated.
Couldn't I just shoot him?
Mulch! Said Holly, horrified. I didn't mean kill him. Just knock him out for a few minutes. Kids like naps. I'd be doing him a favour, really. Knocking him out would be ideal, admitted Holly, but I don't have anything safe, so you'll have to keep him busy for 5 minutes tops.
I am a charmer, I suppose, said Mulch. And if the worst comes to worst, I can always eat him.
He grinned widely at Holly's horrified expression.
I'm kidding. Honest. I'd never eat a mud kid. They're too bony.
Holly elbowed Artemis, who was beside her on the bank. Are you sure about this? It was your basic idea, replied Artemis. But yes, I am sure. There are other options, but we don't have the time. Mulch has always displayed initiative. I feel certain he won't let us down. As for Mr. Day, his freedom is on the line, a strong incentive to perform.
Enough of the chatter, said Mulch. I'm starting to burn here. You know how sensitive dwarf skin is.
He stood, unbuttoning a bum flap on the seat of his pants. Where else would a bum flap be?
Okay, Pixie, hop on.
Dudar Day seemed genuinely frightened.
Are you sure?
Mulch sighed.
Sure, I'm sure. What are you afraid of? It's just a rear end.
Yeah, maybe. But it's smiling at me.
Perhaps it's happy to see you. You don't want to be there if it gets angry.
Holly punched Mulch on the shoulder.
That is a really bad habit, complained Mulch, rubbing his upper arm. You should see someone about your anger issues.
Could you please quit the bum talk? We're on a tight schedule here.
Okay. Get on, Pixie. I promise it won't bite.
Butler lifted the tiny Pixie onto Mulch's back. Just don't look down, advised the bodyguard. You'll be okay.
Easy for you to say,
grumbled Dudar.
You're not the one riding the whirlwind. You never mentioned this in the restaurant, Diggums.
Artemis pointed at the Pixie's backpack. Do you really need that, Mr. Day? It's not very streamlined. Dudar held on to the strap.
Tools of the trade, mad boy. They go where I go.
Very well, said Artemis. A word of advice. Get in and out as fast as you can. Dudar rolled his eyes.
Wow, that's great advice. You should write a book.
Mulch chortled.
Good one.
And avoid his family, continued Artemis. Especially the girl, Minerva.
Family. Minerva. Got it. Now, let's go if we're going before I lose my nerve.
The dwarf unhinged his jaw with wince-worthy cracks and dived headfirst into the mound of earth. It was something to see, scythe-like jaws chomping through the dirt, excavating a tunnel for the dwarf and his passenger. Dudar's eyes were tightly shut, and his expression was one of absolute shock.
Oh, gods!
He said.
Let me off! Let me...
Then they were gone, lost under a blanket of vibrating earth. Holly elbowed her way atop the mound, following their progress through her visor. Diggums is fast, she proclaimed. I'm surprised we ever caught him. Artemis lay beside her. I hope he's fast enough. The last thing we need is for Minerva Paradiso to add a dwarf and a pixie to her fairy collection. Mulch felt good underground. This was a dwarf's natural habitat. His fingers absorbed the rhythms of the earth, and they calmed him. His coarse beard hairs, which were actually a series of sensors, dug into the clay, worming into cracks, sending out pings and reporting back to Mulch's brain. He could feel rabbits digging half a mile to his left. Maybe he could snag one on the way back. For a snack. Dudar hung on for dear life. His face was a rictus of desperation. He would have screamed, but that would have meant opening his mouth, and that was out of the question. Just below Dudar's toes, Mulch's behind churned out a rapid-fire mixture of dirt and air, driving the pair deeper into the tunnel. Dudar could feel the heat from the reaction spreading up his legs. Every now and then, the pixie's boots dropped too close to the dwarf's rear exhaust, and Doodah would have to jerk them up or lose a toe. It only took Mulch a minute to reach the septic tank. He eased himself from the earth, blinking mud from his eyes with thick corkscrew dwarf lashes. "Spot on," he mumbled, spitting out a wriggling worm. Doodah hauled himself over the dwarf's head, clamping a hand over his own mouth to stop himself screaming. After several deep breaths, he calmed down sufficiently to hiss at Mulch.
"You enjoyed that, didn't you?"
Mulch rehinged his jaw, then released a final burst of tunnel gas, which popped him out of the earth.
"That's what I do. Let's say we're even for the pod ride."
Doodah disagreed.
"Let's say I still owe you one for swallowing me."
The bickering would probably have continued, in spite of the urgency of their mission, had not a little boy in an electric toy car come trundling round the corner of the tank.
"Hello, I'm Bo Paradiso," said the driver. "Are you monsters?"
Doodah and Mulch froze momentarily, then remembered the plan.
"No, little boy," said Mulch,
glad he still had the tiny spark of magic necessary to speak French. He tried to smile endearingly, something he didn't spend a lot of time practicing in the mirror.
"We are the chocolate fairies, and we have a special gift for you."
He waved the chocolate bar, hoping the theatrical presentation would make the cheap candy seem more impressive than it was.
"Chocolate fairies," said the boy, climbing from the car. "Sugar-free chocolate, I hope, because I get hyper with sugar, and Daddy says that God knows I'm already hyper enough without it, but he still loves me."
Mulch glanced at the label. 18% sugar.
"Yep, sugar-free. Would you like a square?"
Bo took the entire bar and demolished it in less than 10 seconds.
"You fairies stink, especially you, Harry. You stink worse than the block toilet in Auntie Morgana's. Stinky fairy."
Doodah laughed.
"What can I tell you? The kid tells it like it is, Mulch."
"Do you live in a block toilet, Mr. Fatty Chocolate Fairy?"
"Hey," said Mulch brightly. "How about a nap? Would you like a nap, kid?"
Bo Paradiso punched Mulch in the stomach.
"I had a nap, stupid. More chocolate, now."
"No punching. I don't have more chocolate."
Bo punched him again.
"I said more chocolate, or I'm going to call the guards. And Pierre will reach down your throat and pull out your guts. That's what he does, he told me."
Mulch sniggered.
"I'd like to see him reach into my insides."
"Really?"
said Bo brightly.
"I'll get him."
The little boy sprinted for the corner of the tank. He moved with surprising speed, and Mulch's instincts took over from his brain. The dwarf leaped towards the boy, unhinging as he went.
"Pierre!"
shouted Bo once, but not a second time, because Mulch had enclosed him in his mouth, all except the cowboy hat.
"Do not swallow!"
hissed Doodah. Mulch worked the boy round his cheeks for a few seconds, then spat him out. Bo was dripping wet and sound asleep. Mulch wiped the child's face before the dwarf spittle could harden.
"Sedative in the saliva," he explained, hooking up his jaw. "It's a predator thing. You didn't fall asleep yesterday because I didn't do your head. You'll wake up completely refreshed. I'll peel this stuff off when it hardens."
Doodah shrugged.
"Hey, do I care? I didn't like him anyway."
A voice drifted over the tank.
"Bo, where are you?"
"That must be Pierre. You get moving. Lead him away from here."
Doodah poked his head above the embankment. A large man was headed their way. Not as large as Butler, true, but plenty big enough to squash the pixie under a single boot. The man wore a black security jumpsuit with matching hat. A pistol grip poked from between the buttons. The man squinted towards the tank.
"Bo, is that you?"
he said in French.
"Oui, c'est moi,"
replied Doodah in a warbling falsetto. Pierre was not convinced. The voice had sounded more like a talking piglet than a child. He kept coming, reaching inside his jumpsuit for the gun. Doodah bolted for the electric car. On the way, he picked up Bo's cowboy hat, jamming it onto his head. Pierre was barely a dozen steps away now and quickening his pace.
"Bo, come here now. Minerva wants you in the house."
Doodah slid over the bonnet into the car, hillbilly style. He could tell from a single glance that this toy wouldn't do much more than walking speed, which would be zero use to him in an emergency. He pulled a flat black panel from his bag, suckering it onto the little car's plastic dash. This was a Mongo charger, something no self-respecting smuggler would leave home without. The Mongo charger was equipped with a strong computer, omnisensor, and a clean nuclear battery pack. The omnisensor hacked into the toy car's tiny chip and took over its workings. Doodah pulled a retractable spike cable from the Mongo charger's base and plunged the tip into the car's own power cable beneath the dash. Now the toy car was nuclear-powered. Doodah revved the accelerator.
"That's more like it,"
he said, satisfied. Pierre came round the right side of the tank. This was good because Mulch and the dozing Beau were on his blind side. It was bad because Pierre was directly behind Doodah.
"Beau," said Pierre, "is something wrong?"
His gun was out, pointed at the ground. Doodah's foot hovered over the accelerator, but he couldn't punch it now. Not with this goon staring down his neck.
"Nothing's wrong, Pierre,"
he trilled, keeping his face hidden under the cowboy hat's brim.
"You sound strange, Beau. Are you ill?"
Doodah tipped the accelerator, inching forward.
"No, I'm fine. Just doing funny voices, the way human kids do."
Pierre was still suspicious.
"Human kids?"
Doodah took a chance.
"Yes, human kids. I'm an alien today, pretending to be a human, so go away or I'll reach down your throat and pull out your guts."
Pierre stopped in his tracks, thought for a moment, then remembered.
"Beau, you scoundrel, don't let Minerva hear you talking like that. No more chocolate if you do."
"Put out your guts,"
repeated Doodah for good measure, accelerating gently across a gravel bed onto the driveway. The pixie pulled a stick-on convex mirror from his pack, suckering it to the windscreen. He was relieved to see that Pierre had holstered his weapon and was headed back to his post. Even though it went against all his smuggler's instincts, Doodah kept his speed down on the driveway. His teeth knocked together as he drove over the uneven granite flagstones. A digital readout informed him that he was utilizing 0.01% of the engine's new power. Doodah remembered just in time to mute the Mongo charger. The last thing he needed right now was the computer's electronic voice complaining about his driving skills. There were two guards in front of the main doors. They barely glanced down as Doodah swept past.
"Howdy, Sheriff," said one, grinning.
"Chocolate,"
squeaked Doodah. From the little he knew about Beau, it seemed the most appropriate thing to say. He tapped the accelerator to bump him over the lintel, then drove slowly across a streaked marble floor. The tires spun for grip on the sleek stone, which was a bit worrying. It could cost crucial seconds in the event that he had to make a quick getaway. But at least the corridor was wide enough for a U-turn, if one became necessary. Doodah motored down the hallway, past rows of towering potted palms and several bright abstract works of art, until he came to the corridor's end. There was a camera mounted over an archway, pointed directly at the front hall. A cable snaked out from the box and into a conduit which ran down to the base of the wall. Doodah pulled up by the conduit, hopping from the car. So far, his luck was holding. Nobody had challenged him. This human security was lame. In any fairy building, he would have been laser-scanned a dozen times by now. The pixie yanked a section of conduit away, revealing the cable beneath. It took him mere seconds to twist the length of loaded fiber optics round the video cable. Job done. Smiling, Doodah climbed back into his stolen car. This had been a sweet deal. Amnesty for 5 minutes' work. Time to go home and enjoy a life of freedom. Until he broke the rules again.
"Beau Paradiso, you little brat, come over here right now."
Doodah froze momentarily, then checked his mirror. There was a girl behind him, glaring his way, hands on hips. This, he guessed, would be Minerva. If memory served, he was supposed to keep far away from Minerva.
"Beau, it's time for your antibiotic. Do you want to have that chest infection forever?"
Doodah started the car, rolling it towards the arch and out of this mud girl's sightline. Once round the corner, he could floor the accelerator.
"Don't you dare drive away from me, Bobo!"
"Bobo? No wonder I'm driving away,"
thought Doodah. Who would drive towards someone calling them Bobo?
Chocolate,"
said the pixie, hopefully. It was the wrong thing to do. This girl knew her brother's voice when she heard it, and that wasn't it.
"Bobo, is there something wrong with your voice?"
Doodah swore under his breath.
"Chest infection,"
he said. But Minerva wasn't buying it. She took a walkie-talkie from her pocket and took rapid strides towards the car.
"Pierre, can you come in here, please? Bring André and Louis."
And then to Doodah,
"Just stay there, Bobo. I have a nice bar of chocolate for you."
"Sure," thought Doodah. chocolate and a concrete cell.
He considered his options for a second and came to a conclusion. The conclusion was,
I would rather escape quickly than get captured and tortured to death. I'm out of here,
thought Duda, and floored the accelerator, sending several hundred horsepower shuddering down the fragile drive shaft. He had maybe a minute before the car fell apart, but by then he could be far away from this mud girl and her transparent promises of chocolate. The car took off so fast that it left an image of itself where it had been. Minerva stopped dead.
What?
There was a corner coming up quickly. Duda pulled the wheel in as far as he could, but the vehicle's turning circle was too wide.
Gotta bounce it,
said Duda through gritted teeth. He leaned hard left, eased up on the accelerator and hit the wall side on. At the moment of impact, he shifted his weight and stepped on the gas. The car lost a door, but shot out of the corner like a stone from a sling.
Beautiful,
thought Duda, as soon as his head stopped ringing. He had maybe seconds now before the girl could see him again, and who knew how many guards stood between him and freedom. He was in a long, straight corridor, opening onto a sitting room. Duda could see a wall-mounted television and the top rim of a red velvet sofa. There must be steps down into the room. Not good. This car had only one more impact left in it.
Where is Bobo? Shouted the girl. What have you done with him?
No point in subtlety now. Time to see what this buggy could do. Duda jammed his foot on the accelerator, then made a beeline for a window behind the velvet sofa. He patted the dash.
You can do it, you little junk box. One jump, your chance to be a thoroughbred.
The car didn't answer back. They never did, though occasionally in times of extreme stress and oxygen deprivation, Duda imagined they shared his cavalier attitude. Minerva came round the corner. She was running hard and screaming into a walkie-talkie. Duda heard the words, apprehend, necessary violence, and interrogation, none of which boded well for him. The toy car's wheels spun on a long rug, then caught. The rug was shunted backwards like a length of toffee from a roller. Minerva was bowled over, but kept talking as she went down.
He's headed for the library. Take him down. Shoot if necessary.
Duda held onto the wheel grimly, keeping his line. He was going out of that window, closed or not. He entered the room at 70 miles per hour, flying off a top step. Not bad acceleration for a toy. There were two guards in the room, in the act of drawing their weapons. They wouldn't shoot, though. It still appeared as though the car was being driven by a child.
Suckers,
thought Duda. Then the first bullet crashed into the chassis. Okay, maybe they would shoot the car. He flew in a gentle arc towards the window. Two more bullets took plastic chunks from the bodywork, but it was too late to stop the tiny vehicle. It clipped the lower frame, lost a fender, and tumbled out through the open window.
Somebody really should be filming this,
thought Duda as he clenched his teeth for impact. The crash shook him all the way from his toes to his skull. Stars danced before Duda's eyes for a moment. Then he was in control again, careering towards the septic tank. Mulch was waiting, his wild halo of hair quivering with impatience.
Where have you been? I'm running out of sunblock.
Duda did not waste time with an answer. Instead, he extricated himself from the all-but-demolished car, prizing off his Mongo charger and mirror. Mulch pointed a stubby finger at him.
I have a few more questions.
A bullet fired from the open window ricocheted off the septic tank, throwing up concrete splinters.
But they can wait. Hop on.
Mulch turned, presenting Duda with his back and more besides. Duda jumped on, grabbing thick hanks of Mulch's beard.
Go, he shouted. They're right behind me.
Mulch unhinged his jaw and went into the clay like a hairy torpedo. But as fast as he was, they wouldn't have made it. Armed guards were two paces away. They would have seen the gently snoring bow and riddled the moving tunnel mound with bullets. They probably would have tossed in a few grenades for good measure. But they didn't, because at that precise moment, all hell broke loose inside the chateau. As soon as Duda had twisted the loaded fibre optic round the video cable, hundreds of tiny spikes had punctured the rubber, making dozens of strong contacts with the wiring inside. Seconds later, in Section 8 HQ, information came flooding into Foley's terminal. He had video, alarm systems, waffle boxes and communications all flashing up in separate windows on his screen. Foley cackled, cracking his knuckles like a concert pianist. He loved those old fibre optic twists, not as fancy as the new organic bugs, but twice as reliable.
Okay, he said into a reed mic on his desk. I'm in control. What kind of nightmares would you like to give the Paradisos?
In the south of France, Captain Holly Short spoke into her helmet microphone. Whatever you have, stormtroopers, helicopters, overload their communications, blow out their waffle boxes, set off all the alarms. I want them to believe they are under attack. Foley called up several phantom files on his computer. The phantoms were one of his own pet projects. He would lift patterns from human movies, soldiers, explosions, whatever, and then use them universally in whatever scene he chose. In this case, he sent a squad of French Army Special Forces, the Commandement des Opérations Spéciales, or COS, to the Paradiso's closed-circuit system. That would do nicely for starters. Inside the chateau, the Paradiso chief of security, Juan Soto, had a little problem. His little problem was that a couple of loose shots were being popped off in the house. This can only be seen as a little problem in relation to the very big problem that Foley was sending his way. Soto was speaking into a radio.
"Yes, Miss Paradiso," he said, keeping his voice calm. "I realize that your brother may be missing. I say maybe because that may be him in the toy car. He sure looks like him to me." Okay, I take your point. It is unusual for toy cars to fly that far. It could be a malfunction."
Soto resolved to have strong words with the two idiots who had actually fired on a toy car on Minerva's command. He did not care how smart she was. No child was giving orders like that on his watch. Even though Miss Minerva was nowhere near the security center and could not see his face, Chief Soto adopted an expression for the lecture he was about to give.
"Now, Miss Paradiso, you listen to me," he said.
Then his expression changed completely as the security system went ballistic.
"Yes, Chief, I'm listening."
The chief held onto his radio with one hand. With the other, he flicked numerous switches on his security console, praying for malfunction.
"There seems to be a full squad of COS converging on the chateau. My God, there are some in the house. Helicopters, the rooftop cameras are picking up helicopters."
Transmissions suddenly squawked through the band monitor.
"And we have chatter. They're after you, Miss Paradiso, and your prisoner. My God, the alarms have all been tripped. Every sector, we're surrounded. We need to evacuate. I can see them in the tree line. They have a tank. How did they get a tank up here?"
Outside, Artemis and Butler watched the chaos Foley had created. Alarm klaxons ripped through the alpine air, and security men sprinted to ordained spots. Butler lobbed a few smoke grenades into the grounds to add to the effect.
"A tank," said Artemis wryly into his fairy phone. "You sent them a tank."
"You've hacked into the audio feed,"
said Foley sharply.
"Just what else can that phone of yours do?"
"It can play solitaire and Minesweeper," replied Artemis innocently. Foley grunted doubtfully.
"We'll talk about this later, Mudboy. For now, let's concentrate on the plan."
"Excellent suggestion. Do you have any phantom-guided missiles?" The security chief nearly fainted. The radar had picked up two tracks spiralling from the belly of a helicopter.
"Mon Dieu! Missiles! They're firing smart bombs at us! We must evacuate now!"
He flicked open a perspex panel, revealing an orange switch below. With only a moment's hesitation, he pressed the orange switch. The various alarms were immediately cut off and replaced by a single continuous whine, the evac alarm. The moment this was sounded, the guards changed course, heading for their assigned vehicles or principals, and the non-security residents of the chateau began gathering data, or whatever was most precious to them. On the eastern side of the house, a series of garage doors opened and six black BMW four-wheel drives sprang into the courtyard like cougars. One had blacked-out windows. Artemis studied the situation through binoculars.
"Watch the girl," he said into the tiny phone in his palm. "The girl is the key. I'm guessing hers is the vehicle with the tinted windows."
The girl Minerva appeared through patio doors, speaking calmly into a walkie-talkie. Her father trailed beside her, dragging a protesting Beau Paradiso by the hand. Billy Kong came last, bending slightly under the weight of a large golf bag.
"Here we go, Holly. Are you ready?"
"Artemis, I'm the field agent here," came the irritated reply. "Stay off my band unless you have something to contribute. I was just thinking that you should change your middle name to Control Freak." Artemis glanced across at Butler, who was lying beside him on the verge and couldn't help overhearing the entire exchange.
"Control Freak, can you believe that?"
"The nerve of some people," replied the bodyguard, without taking his eyes off the chateau.
To their left, a small patch of earth began to vibrate. Mud, grass, and insects were thrust upwards in a sudden gush, followed by two heads, one dwarf and one pixie. Doodah climbed over Mulch's shoulders, collapsing on the ground.
"You people are crazy,"
he panted, plucking a beetle from his shirt pocket.
"I should be getting more than amnesty for this. I should be getting a pension."
"Quiet, little man," said Butler calmly. "Phase two of the plan is about to start, and I wouldn't want to miss it because of you."
Doodah blanched.
"Neither would I. Want you to miss it, that is, because of me."
Outside the chateau's garage, Billy Kong popped one of the BMW's boots, hefting the golf bag inside. It was the car with the tinted windows. Artemis opened his mouth to issue an order, then closed it again. Holly probably knew what to do. She did. The driver's door clunked open a fraction, apparently all on its own, then closed again. Before Minerva or Billy Kong could do more than blink in surprise, the 4x4 started up and lay down a 6-meter length of rubber, skidding towards the main gate.
Perfect, said Artemis under his breath. Now, Miss Minerva Paradiso, would-be criminal mastermind, let us see exactly how smart you are. I know what I would do in this situation.
Minerva Paradiso's reaction was a bit less dramatic than one might expect from a child who had just had her prized possession stolen. There were no tantrums or foot stamping. Billy Kong also defied expectations. He did not so much as draw a weapon. Instead, he squatted on his hunkers, ran his fingers through his manga hair, and lit a cigarette, which Minerva promptly plucked from his lips and squashed underfoot. Meanwhile, the 4x4 was getting away, barreling towards the main gates. Perhaps Minerva was confident that the reinforced steel barrier would be sufficient to halt the BMW in its tracks. She was wrong. Holly had already weakened the bolts with her neutrino. One tap from the vehicle's grille would be more than sufficient to barge the gates out of the way, if it got that far, which it did not. After she had crushed Kong's cigarette, Minerva took a remote control from her pocket, tapped in a short code, then hit the send button. In the BMW's cab, a tiny charge detonated in the airflow system, releasing a cloud of sevoflurane, a potent sleeping gas. In seconds, the vehicle began to weave, ramping the driveway bushes and cutting a swathe through the manicured lawn.
Problems, said Butler.
Said Artemis. A gas device, I would guess, fast-acting. Possibly cyclopropane or sevoflurane. Butler knelt, drawing his pistol.
Should I stroll in there and get him?
No, you shouldn't. The BMW was careering wildly now, following the dips and slopes of the ground's topography. It destroyed a mini golf green, pulverized a gazebo, and decapitated a centaur statue. Hundreds of miles below ground, Foley winced. The vehicle finally came to a rest in a lavender bed, nose down, rear wheels spinning, spitting out hunks of clay and uprooted long-stemmed purple flowers like missiles. Nice action, thought Mulch, but he kept the notion to himself, fully aware that this might not be the time to stretch Butler's patience. Butler was raring to go. His gun was out and the tendons in his neck were stretched, but Artemis held him back with a touch to the forearm.
No, he said, not now. I know your impulse is to help, but now is not the time.
The bodyguard jammed his Sig Sauer handgun back into its holster, scowling.
Are you sure, Artemis? Trust me, old friend.
And of course Butler did, even if his instincts were not so sure. Inside the grounds, a dozen security guards were warily approaching the vehicle, led by Billy Kong. The man moved like a cat on the balls of his feet. Even his face was feline, smug grin and flat eyes. On his signal, the men rushed the car, reclaiming the golf bag and hauling an unconscious Holly from the front seat. The elf was cuffed with plastic ties and hauled across the garden to where Minerva Paradiso and her father stood, waiting. Minerva removed Holly's helmet and knelt to examine her pointed ears. Through his binocular lenses, Artemis could see clearly that she was smiling.
It had been a trap. All a trap.
Minerva tucked the helmet under her arm, then walked briskly back towards the house. Halfway there, she stopped and turned. Shielding her eyes from the sun's glare, she scanned the shadows and peaks of the surrounding hillsides.
What's she looking for?
Butler speculated aloud. Artemis did not wonder. He knew exactly what this surprising girl was after.
She's looking for us, old friend.
If that was your shadow, perhaps you might have wondered where a spy would conceal himself.
Of course, and that's why I picked this spot. The ideal location would have been further up the hill, in that cluster of rocks, but that would also have been the first spot any security expert would booby-trap. This would be my second choice, and so my first choice.
Minerva's gaze swept past the rock cluster and rested on the line of bushes where they were hiding. She couldn't possibly see them, but her intellect told her that they were there. Artemis focused on the girl's pretty face. It amazed him that he could appreciate Minerva's features, even as his friend was being hauled into captivity. Puberty was a powerful force. Minerva was smiling. Her eyes were bright, and they taunted Artemis across the veil between them. She spoke in English. Artemis and Butler, both expert lip-readers, had no difficulty interpreting her short sentence.
"Did you get that, Artemis?"
asked Butler.
"I got it, and she got us. Your move, Artemis Fowl," Minerva had said.
Butler sat back in the ditch, slapping mud from his elbows. "I thought you were one of a kind, Artemis, but that girl is a smart one." "Yes," said Artemis, musing. "She's a regular juvenile criminal mastermind." Below ground, in Section 8 headquarters, Foley groaned into his microphone. "Great," he said. "Now there are two of you."